lot of us are doing it because it's fun. It's something that we do, you know, on our own free time, and we don't get paid to do it. We're doing it because it's something that we love to do.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I'm Chip.
And I'm Chris, and this is episode 54 of the show. I don't know, each time we get, as these numbers get higher, each higher time higher. I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this. Anyway, we have a great show for you this week that actually seems pretty timely given everything that's been going on in the world lately. We have sociologist, sports psychologist, and elite swim runner Susie Moonen of Push On Coaching on the show. And this interview is really all about kind of the mental side of training and racing, and I think worth every second.
I concur.
More on this conversation later in the show.
Yes, on to this week's shout-outs. We are shouting out our friend and fellow Novato resident, Sarah, for finishing the Together Relay Challenge. Now, you might be wondering, what is this? Well, great. We got the answer for you right here. It's a self-guided race around the entire Bay Ridge Trail, which totals over 400 miles, split up between 70 different segments, with a grand total of 72,000 feet of climbing.
Yeah, that's like going up Everest.
That's impressive.
Times, yeah.
That's a triple Everest-esque.
Pretty nuts.
Chris ran a few of these segments with Sarah a few weeks ago and is reporting back he has no desire to do the entire challenge by himself like Sarah did.
None at all.
None at all. Is that true? care to comment, Chris?
Yes. Okay. I have zero interest in doing that challenge.
So kudos to you, Sarah. We look forward to spotting the Feats of Endurance bumper sticker at our local Trader Joe's. On to training updates and adventure time.
Yeah, these two things kind of go hand in hand. Last weekend, we made it out to Lake Sonoma and surveyed a potential swim run course that looks like it's going to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I think that we definitely learned some lessons from it. I think the run leading it out was a little long, but I found a way to cut out about like just 5.5 miles of just running at the beginning and the end. So I think it makes that course way more doable. So I think next step is to actually go out there now that we've checked out and sort of mm-hmm. scoped out the swim run entrances and exits, and it doesn't look like something ridiculous to really try. Yeah, so we'll just have to suit up and kind of see what happens next.
Yeah, the water level is pretty low, but it was fun to go out there and kind of think, like, I've noticed my trail running has kind of like shifted a little bit on what I'm looking for.
You've been
stuff.
Doing this for a while.
I know.
You're always like, hey, we should try swimming in there. I'm like, that looks
sound?
Like, yeah, it's like, hey, we should try swimming there. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's like a sewer runoff.
There's a gator. There's like gators in there. Okay. On to everyone's favorite segment, maybe just our favorite theme song segment, This Week in Swim Run, powered by RaceID.com. We are solidly in swim run off season, so there's no new race updates to share, but we do have registrations that have opened up for mini races, including the Odyssey Swim Run Series, which includes Orcas Island, Casco Bay, and Austin. The early bird pricing is still available, so go and snag that. Save yourself some greenbacks. And they have a new race on the calendar for 2021, Swim Run Ludington in Michigan. There's a really cool hype YouTube video out there with previous guest of the show, John Stevens. And you can see what everyone's talking about with this race and the sand dunes and all that good stuff. Another reminder, the registration window for Otolo World Championship is closing January 20th. So go, go, go if you're wanting to apply for that lottery. Go check out their press release in the show notes to get all the details on how to enter and make sure you have enough points and all that good stuff. That's it for this week. Go ahead and email us any tips, any new events or swim run news that you want us to share on the show. LowTieBoys@gmail.com. On to this week's interview.
Yeah, so as mentioned at the beginning of the show, our conversation this week just seems really timely. And so we're joined by Susie Moonen to talk about the mental side of sports and swim run. We first learned about Susie during the Champions Christmas Challenge Gala that Fanny and Desiree put together, where she shared a message to all the participants that must have been a couple minutes, and we talk about it on the interview, but I was like super moved by it and instantly reached out to her. And I knew that I wanted to get her on the show, and I think Chip and I like texted you right away.
Yeah, letting you know to get her on the show.
He's like, who? I'm like, don't worry about it. It'll be great. Anyway, she's an elite swim runner. She's a coach. She's a sociologist and a sports psychologist with their own coaching platform called Push On Coaching. In this interview, we talked about a lot of stuff, her elite swimming background, how she had goals to qualify for the Olympics at age 16, and how she wasn't really mentally prepared for that intense pressure of having those goals, mm-hmm. and how these experiences set her on the path to study sociology, psychology, and ultimately find her passion with helping others mentally prepare for their athletic achievements. She's raced a world championship, came in second in 2019. There's a lot of good stuff. It's hard to really summarize like all the tips, but I felt after this interview that, you know, I just felt like I had yet more tools in my quiver mm-hmm. to be prepared for races and handle adversity. So that was awesome.
Yeah, and it's a totally a different avenue or something else to kind of work on for swim run, or it's across all endurance sports, obviously, but kind of that mental side is such a huge room for opportunity to be really good or to have a lot of problems with and be really struggling. I mean, a lot of people have been there before, myself included. But yeah, really love this interview with Susie, and we're confident that you will too. So enjoy. Susie Moon.
All right. With us today, we have Susie Moonen. She is a sports psychologist out of Sweden, a swim runner, pretty elite swim runner, and we're just very stoked to have her on the show to talk about the mental side of swim run. Welcome to the show, Susie.
Thank you so much.
So, as we've mentioned off the air, I heard you speak for the first time at Fanny and Desiree's Champions Christmas Challenge Gala, e-gala.
Exclusive.
Yes. Yeah, exclusive gala. And it was a pre-recorded message. I think it was probably like a couple minutes long, but I was really moved by what you said. And it was an aspect of the sport that we always love talking about on the show. So that's why we wanted to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me on board. And as I said just before we recorded, it's a subject that I love and I've been working with for quite some time. So I'm happy to be able to talk a wee bit more about it.
So let's start kind of like at the beginning. You're a pretty elite athlete in your own right. Can you tell us a little about your sort of athletic background and kind of how you discovered that you have a passion for sports psychology?
Well, my background is within swimming. So I come from a swimming background. I've been swimming since I was five. When my family, we lived in Saudi Arabia, actually, for my upbringing. And that's when I started to swim. And it's always been a natural part of my life. And when we moved to Sweden, when I was eight, I started to compete within swimming and had a quite fast lane into the elite level. And it was pretty exciting at the time. But I was very young when I started to compete on international level. So my first swimming event overseas was when I was 13, and it was a really cool experience, but I was very, very young, especially mentally, being 13 years old and representing Sweden. Wow. And it was like looking back at it now, it was really awesome but also really tough. And I mean it's nearly 20 years ago. That sounds like such a long time ago, but it is actually 30. There wasn't any mental preparation for us, and we were kind of just shoved into that like huge world on other international swimmers, and I wasn't prepared for it, to be honest. But I did it for a couple of years. I was able to participate in the European Championships and the World Championships 2002, 2003 and 2004 was my last European Championships. And my big goal at that time, as it was Olympic year 2004. And in Athens, and my goal was to try to be on the Olympic team. And I was able to go to Athens and see the Olympic pool and go to the Olympic camp. It was like so wow. close. Yeah, it was really cool. I was 16 then, and that was like my big goal. But I was also at that time, I started to have some mental difficulties. I had a lot of pressure on myself and also from trainers and coaches and like Swedish media at that time as well. We didn't have such a strong like women's backstroker. I was the only one at that time. So they wanted us to qualify in our relay team for as an example. And when you do relay, it's the backstroker that has the first start. So I had a lot of pressure from me. Yeah. And being 15, 16 and having a reporter ask how, you know, saying that, you know, that you're in the start. So it's really important that we have a strong, like, first stretch. And it's pretty much all up to you to have, make sure that we have a good lead.
Jeez.
Wow. That's a lot. I mean, I'm even thinking of this now.
My 30s. I'm feeling stressed out.
I have anxiety right now. But so you're preparing to be in the Olympics. You're at the qualification to be in the Olympics. And I'm not even sure I was watching the Olympics at this time, let alone being able to participate in them. So that's an achievement in itself. So congratulations on that. And that's a really cool way to be able to represent your country.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's, I mean, many people just dream of the opportunity to even qualify for the Olympics, you know, and training at the grounds and everything. So that's awesome.
Well, it was awesome. But unfortunately, I didn't really appreciate it that much at the time. More now when I, you know, in my head, I'm still an elite athlete. But, you know, physically, I'm not. But so looking back, I'm like, why didn't I appreciate it more? Why wasn't I like enjoying it even more? I was always like looking for the next step, the next goal. And I think that's something that a lot of like athletes say, that they don't actually enjoy that moment when they actually achieve their goal, when they get that medal they've been aiming for a long time, or qualifying to a competition they've been aiming for. They, you know, it's always the next step, the next step. And I, at that time, it was the same for me. And I had so much, I'm sure we'll get into that more, but I really had needed some more like mental skills at that time, because I was just waiting for the whole thing to be over and done with, to be honest, because I was so nervous. I couldn't handle, I didn't have any stress management skills at that time. So it was a love-hate relationship, really.
So
I wish I could have enjoyed it a bit more.
Yeah, totally. And it's such a stark contrast, you know, here we are, let's just call it 20 years later from when you were qualifying for the Olympics. You know, nowadays you hear about, oh, the athletes are doing Headspace. They're doing 30 minutes meditation before every workout. They're drinking this tea. They're on these like perfect regimens and schedules and everything. Well, at least maybe in the U.S., I think all countries kind of go all out for the Olympics. But it doesn't sound like any of that stuff was even thought of, even at the most elite level back in the early 2000s. So when did you kind of see some of the sports psychology and the mindfulness and the being present and sort of that aspect kind of start working its way into the elite levels of sport?
Yeah, well, it was just after 2004, and I missed my spot for the Olympics. And my coach at the time, she kind of acknowledged that, because there was nothing, because she could see that I was, during training, I was performing really well. I was really like strong and did like really good results. But when it came to competition, I just couldn't really reach that level. And so she helped me get in contact with a sports psychologist, and I worked with him for nearly 3 years.
Wow.
And we worked a lot with stress management and with motivation. Those were my two like trigger points, the things, my weakest points. And especially when I turned like 19, 20 years old, at that time I felt like really old within swimming, which like today is not, I mean, there's no age to be 20 and be an elite swimmer. But back then, I kind of felt that, you know, I'd either do swimming 110% or not at all. So these were the things I was working a lot with my sports psychologist. When I was 20, I came to the point when I felt I'd been swimming for 15 years. I was fed up with having backpacks stinking of chlorine, and I wanted to be a 20-year-old with you know, after school or after work doing other things. So I quit swimming when I was 20. I just felt that, you know, I was finished with it, and I wanted to study. So I studied social work and behavioral science. And decided at that point never to train or compete again. I wanted to wear like tiny handbags every day, like I would see other women do, training backpacks all the time.
Yeah.
But I think it took about like 4 or 5 months. And of course, you know, my body and my head that was so used to training. So I started to have the urge to get rid of some energy, get those endorphins again. So I started like training other things I've never done before, like group training sessions and body pump and spinning and stuff like that. And I did that for quite some time. And then the urge to compete again, I came back, and at the same time that I started to work within social work. And so I was doing that, and then I was longing for, because when you compete, it's something that happens to your head, something that happens to your body, that and that pressure that you put on yourself, as I was talking about earlier, this like love-hate relationship that you have, or that I have, like being very, very nervous, but also the fulfillment after a competition. It's just something, it's like drugs, to be honest.
Yeah,
you get
sure.
so high, I get so high on it.
Sure.
So I started to do triathlon just for fun, and just, and what, like got in, back into swimming that way as well. And so I signed up for Ironman, started to do some like more longer endurance kind of races. And I fell into swim run, because I had a friend who asked if I wanted to do a swim run competition with him. And this was in, I think it was 2014.
Okay.
And a close friend of mine, Pat Christopher Sean, and I was very cocky at that back then, or at that point, because I said, oh, swim run, that'll be fine. You know, I'm a strong swimmer. I'm a strong pool swimmer, that it won't be a problem. And we started the race, and I was so tired, like 45 minutes into the race. Swimming open water is completely different. Swimming open water during swim run is also completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's so much or it's tougher in a different way from pool swimming, because you go from running to swimming, and you know the pulse goes up and down compared to when you're swimming in a pool. You kind of have a more like consistent like speed throughout the whole mm-hmm. race, and you race for like, well, I was a backstroker also, and I did 50 and 100 meters, so I mean I was active for 26 seconds or
right.
1 minute.
You're a sprinter,
wow.
basically.
Yeah, you're like you're Hussein Bolt, but in the pool, on the back.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Or mentally, at least, I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a failure, my first swim run competition. I think Pat, he dragged me through the whole race. I was so beat after that. But of course, like the urge to redo it was still there. So I started training a bit more specifically for swim run. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so.
And it seems
how I got into it.
And it seems like that worked out. I mean, last year, you did really well at the World Championship. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of that journey from your first swim run to then, you know, almost winning the thing?
Uto in 2016, and then in 2018,
yeah.
the Isles of Sicily with our friend and fan of the show, Fanny Kuhn.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
second place at the Otolo World Championship last year in the female division, Team Envol 222 with Anna.
Yeah. It was really happy to be able to compete again and enjoy competing. Erta was what was a goal that I had for quite some time, and then I was pregnant 1 year, and the year after that I was qualified, but then I was injured, so I had a couple of years when I missed Erta, I just got into training, was able to train really good last couple of years, and especially improved my running, my trail running.
Mm-hmm.
And Anna, that I competed with 2019 for Erta, she's a really strong runner, inspired me to like dare to run into the forest without having, not
like
being afraid to fall or trip or anything like that.
Reckless abandon.
Yeah, exactly. So we it wasn't something that I planned for when I started swim run 2014. It's always been something that I wanted to do because it was fun. But then, as I said, this competing gene that's developed throughout the years is like always there. And when I'm getting close to something big or to one of my goals, I just, like I say, for a lot of people, it's just, you know, there's nothing gets in the way for that. Like, you try to do anything you can to reach that goal. And that's how it's been the last couple of years. It's been the body's responding really well, and I'm happy. And I have that urge to compete, and it's been fun throughout the whole time. And that's, I think that's what's made me be able to reach all of these competitions and place really well on them.
Well, you know, I this is really interesting, and I guess we'll transition into more of the sports psychology stuff, but it sounds like your relationship with competition has changed over the years. And, you know, and one thing that I always thought, and when I was kind of getting burnt out on triathlon, definitely not at any elite level or anything like that, was, this is sport and it should be enhancing your life. And if it isn't bringing you joy or it's not fun, you should just find something else to do. That's my sort of like, you know, armchair sports psychologist opinion. But it seems like your experience, you know, as a super elite athlete, having sort of a negative relationship with competition, it sounds like you've changed that now. And now it's fun. Can you explain kind of how you got to that mindset?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two ways of it. I think one is that like my professional development in my education, behavioral science and sports psychology, working with athletes, and then I have my personal side where I love to train and where I love to compete. I think that like the two of them have combined quite a lot, but I think also like maturity has helped me reach that point where understand, just as you say, training and racing should be something I don't get paid for it. It's nothing I do on my, it's not my full-time job. Mm-hmm. I take time from my family, from friends, from other stuff to train, to compete. So it has to be something that is something I've chosen to do. I don't have any trainer or any coach telling me what to do anymore, or I do at some point, but not like when I used to swim and I have a coach expecting me to be at a certain place at a certain time and doing a certain session. I'm doing everything by free will now, and I think that's really important. I think it puts me in control of it, in my own life, and controlling my that I'm doing this because it's something that I want to do. I think that's helped me come to that point now, that I enjoy racing a lot more than I used to do.
So, I mean, so that's awesome. And now at what point do you decide it's like, hey, I'm going to start push on coaching and actually try to share all this knowledge and experience that I've gained and perspective to help others?
Well, it was, as I said, I think it was during those years when I had decided I was never going to train or ever never going to race again, I was never going to do anything with sports again. As I was working within foster care, I've been working as a counselor for a couple of years, and then it was just, I felt that something was missing, and I realized that I want to work more within like the world of sports or with athletes, and I realized I'm actually able to combine two of them, that I can work as a counselor with athletes, or I can work as a behavioral scientist with athletes and with clubs and with coaches, also. And that's why I started Push On Coaching in 2014. And it was to start off with a bit of a hobby, to get in contact with athletes again. And I thought it was pretty cool to be able to work with, I started off working with quite young athletes that were in the same age that I was when I started to doubt myself, or when I felt that I needed more tools to be able to cope with different obstacles that athletes have in their everyday life. So that's why I started Push On Coaching. That's why I started to work with athletes, when I realized I could combine my academical background with my own hobby or my interest with sport.
That's the magical crossroads right there. Yeah. I think it sounds like you nailed it. If you really do kind of step back and think, I mean, this happened to you, but like the amount of pressure that as society, we kind of put on children to perform athletically when they're like not even fully developed, being 10 to 13, 14, 15 at like a really high level, is pretty crazy to think, like, you know, now, hey, you're 15 years older or 20 years older than when you were a kid, but you didn't have any tools. You didn't know what anxiety, or, you know, you don't know what anxiety is. You know, if you're bummed out or you're not feeling like hanging out with people, like, hey, but like, so what are some kind of common problems that that some of your people that you're working with come, are there a couple main themes? That is it anxiety about I need to perform at this race, or is it, hey, I'm a little bit bummed out because I don't get to have my normal childhood, you know, I don't get to go to prom, or like your thing, I don't get the cool handbag, I have to lug around this big gym bag that's soaking wet and smells like chlorine. What's kind of the main areas that people are struggling with these days?
Well, opportunities. I meet a lot with athletes who they seek advice or support on how to deal with like strong emotions during competition. A lot with stress management tools that they're looking for. But when we kind of like some of the athletes, they ask for advice when it comes to this, and we can work specifically with that. But I also find it that when we start to scratch, like on the surface, there's actually a lot more to it when it comes to like their attitude towards their own sports that we have to work on first before we start to go into stress management skills, as like attitude, like having a positive attitude to your sport is the base in your whole sports life or athlete's life. So if you don't have a positive attitude towards your sport, it's difficult to work with stress management skills. We kind of have to go to the base first. So that's quite common, that they come and they seek support for something, and then we find that there's other things kind of in the bottom that we have to start off with. But also working with a lot with self-talk is quite common that I work with athletes on.
That's like your inner judge, where you're just
inner critic or
inner
something.
Critic.
Yeah, exactly.
Helping them to maintain their self-confidence during like difficult times, with helping them to use realistic positive self-talk, like during competition, for instance, when especially like endurance races where, you know, there's so many hours that you're doing something, and then you will have periods where you doubt yourself, and you have to be able to help yourself out of that. You need to find that within, you need to use yourself to
it's
get
so
out of it.
It's so funny because that's like such a, I mean, it seems like such an obvious thing, but, you know, there's all sorts of books written around the concept of PMA, like positive mental attitude, and how, like, you know, it isn't something, it seems like, oh, yeah, just have it. But it's there's so much more there. And when you're dealing with younger people, you just don't have enough life experience to even, like, as you mentioned, like, you appreciated the experience in hindsight, being able to do all the things like in Greece and stuff. But at the time, you just had no perspective.
Well, they didn't have the tools either.
Yeah.
Like, as a parent, you're not in parenting school, which doesn't exist. You're not getting the 2 months of psychology, how to raise your kid without fucking them up thing, you know? So you're just trying to do the best that you can, or do the opposite of what your parents did, or do more of what your parents did, right?
So we're still waiting for that course, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. I think maybe it'll be on YouTube someday or something, and we all can take it and everything will be better. But what are some things there? Is it kind of positive mantras? What, how do you sort of help if, you know, everyone that's been in any sort of athletic event, which is mostly the listeners of this show, you're going to have kind of those moments where you go in a dark area where you're not feeling too great about yourself. So what are some kind of like two or three things that people can do, if there is that thing, to kind of help them focus on getting to the end of that dark period quicker?
Well, one thing is to know, like, is to find out, well, how do I react in this situation? Like, how do I react when I race? How am I usually? What are my trigger points? When during which time am I the weakest? What happens? Like, I need to know what I think and what I say and what I do, what thoughts that I have when something difficult occurs, like during a race or during a tough training session. And if you don't know how you react, you need to find out. And how do you find out? Well, you monitor your reaction and your thoughts. Like, you write them down, or you know, write them in your phone, or like whatever, just to find out, okay, this is how I react. And so that's the first step. And the second step is to use different kind of thoughts or like behavioral instead, and so the outcome is more positive or better for you. And like, for instance, this is such a easy or simple example, but
that's fine.
I know that I worked with some athletes when it comes to using like the stop method, that they get into a negative spiral and they just can't get out of it, and they can't use, like, it doesn't help them to say stop to themselves or to try to think about something else. They need something physical to happen to be able to kind of get out of that negative spiral. So they, like a lot of women, they use like rubber bands that you have in your hair and put them around your wrist and just like snap yourself,
snap
kind
them.
Of thing. Yeah. As a way to remind yourself that, okay, I know where I'm going now. Now I need to put in this thought instead, or I need to do this instead to get out of that.
It kind of snaps you out of your like mental lock. You're almost like locked in this one thing of thinking, and you need an outside thing. And that's I have heard of the kind of the rubber band thing before.
What one thing, the like most important thing that I use it myself, but it's one thing that I work a lot with the athletes that I meet, is to put in do everything beforehand. So it's kind of, you know, we talk a lot about being positive and having positive thoughts, and I think like we know that that's important, but it's even more important to have I call it like crisis plan or plan B, and it's actually to go through in your head, what do you do if this happens? What do you do if that happens? And it's not in any way being negative about what you're going about the race, the upcoming race. It's because when it does, if it does happen, then your brain, your body knows what to do. Say with a swimmer, for instance. The biggest fear is always to lose your goggles when you do the when the start signal goes and you dive in and your goggles fall off, and it causes a lot of stress for a lot of people. But if you're able to kind of go through, okay, so what if the worst thing happens that they do fall off? What do you do? You know, kind of going through that. Well, in that case, you know, obviously it's, I don't think many people would get out of the water and not do the race. People would just go ahead and do the best they can anyway, right?
Yeah, for 26 and, seconds, sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's. I think those examples are really interesting. I mean, there was a, this was years ago for me, but I was trying to PR like a half marathon and my shoelace came untied. And I just like, pun intended, like I unraveled. Like I was like, well, that's it.
You came untied.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's it. That's like, I'll just phone it in because I'm never going to be able to make up those 10 seconds or whatever because I was right on the edge.
Shoelace broke you that race.
Yeah, and it's, you know, in hindsight, it was like, oh, that was so dumb. And now I would just be like, all right, new challenge, let's go. I think, you know, so bringing it back a little bit to swim run, you know, one of the things that we talk a lot about on the show, one of the things we love about the sport is how each race presents like a unique challenge. And you can plan for it, but a lot of the stuff is unexpected. Like you never know what the weather is going to be. You never know what the conditions.
Or you can't control it either.
You can't control it. You just have to get from A to B with your partner and problem solve kind of as you go along. Can you share with us sort of, I guess, any tips or advice that you have as to, you know, I guess, how do you see problem solving in swim run and what can you do to prepare for that experience to try to make sure that it stays positive the whole time, even in adversity?
Adversity is inevitably going to happen in a swim run.
Definitely. Well, I am using your mental imagery is like key when it comes to mental training or preparation before a race. So it doesn't matter which level you're on, if you're doing your first swim run or if you're doing your fifth at and could reach the podium, going through the race as much as possible mentally is if you haven't done the race before, you can use a map. There's a race briefing. You can talk to people that's done the race before, like finding out as much information as possible and going through everything in your head from the start to the end and using all of your senses, like using how will it smell when you go into that cold water or into the forest, or how's it going to feel, how's your legs going to be after running for 4 hours, and like going through as much as possible because that helps your mind to be prepared for what's going to come. And like our brains, they can't differ from what we imagine and from what's actually happened.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
I was just going to add a own personal story. When I was like in junior college, I played baseball a little bit, and we did have a little bit, and this is kind of the same time period when you were doing your Olympic thing, except 2006 or 7 or something. Anyway, one coach taught me that I found to be really successful as a pitcher. So I would throw the ball in to the hitter, and it's, you know, so one thing was to visualize your pitches against, you know, would be like, oh, we're facing this team and their number three hitter is like the best hitter in the league. He's, you know, he's going to hit a home run off of you. So visualize how you're going to approach this person. And essentially what you're saying, or how I'm hearing it, is like, you want to visualize your entire race, which I feel is kind of what Chris and I had a really positive race in Odyssey Swim Run Austin. And we had, we spent probably 30 minutes or 45 minutes the night before going leg by leg, saying, are we going to cab down here? Are we going to take a gel here? Who's leading? Who's running? And we just really went really thorough. And I felt like it helped us unlock a really great race for us, was because that level of preparation.
I think what you're talking about, Susie, as well, is kind of like, if you can anticipate problems or scenarios that could come up, then you're just even just that little bit more prepared to deal with it should it actually happen. Like in a triathlon, like you should anticipate and be prepared to change a flat tire. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you going to do if you get a flat tire? Are you just going to sit on the side of the road and wait to be picked up? Or are you going to, do you have a plan in place to deal with that? I think that's super, super good point.
Yeah, because it needs to be, like the plans, they need to be detailed, specific, and like realistic. Because as you said, a flat tire could happen during a triathlon. And one of my friends, we did a long cycling race here in Sweden called Vätternrundan, and she was just refusing to bring extra tube and extra like tools if she had to have a change of flat tire. So she did the whole race with like, with some cash in her shorts, because she was just saying that she's going to put her hand out and hope that somebody would help her if that would, you know, if that would happen. Luckily, she didn't have a flat tire, but I don't think that's a strategy that would help, that could work in every race that you would do.
Right.
So, yes, definitely going through a crisis plan and just talking about, so what do we do in the situation? And that's the great thing with swimrun, because you do have your teammates, where you could talk about all these things, saying that, you know, I, like Anna, for instance, she, for at 2019, she's been telling me for like several times that her weak point is on Ona, when it's 20k.
Yeah, right after the big swim, super long run. Yeah.
Yeah, and she, because she doesn't fill up with enough energy like the hours before, and it really hits her, or it has previously hit her quite hard during Ona. So she was saying that if I get too quiet in the beginning of Ona, you need to just fill me with some energy. Like, okay, mm-hmm. So good. You know, I'm ready. I could see those signals on her, and I knew what to do, because she wasn't fit for that right now. At that point, she was too tired. And like, we had the same things with myself as well, my weak points during the race that we had spoken about before. And that brings me into other things you can do to prepare yourself for a swim run race or practice, and that is actually the people skills is something that I think is really, really important, and especially within swim run, when you do have a teammate that you need to communicate things with, it's really important to be able to have like some basic people skills, like when it comes to
conflict resolution,
and being able to communicate like your thoughts and feelings and needs to your partner. It's really important, because you can't know that your partner knows, can read what you're going through
right
at some point, what you're thinking.
And I think implicit in what you're saying too is kind of like being open to be vulnerable with your partner. When it's like, if I'm having a problem, like I need to be able to tell Chipper, it's like, hey, this is happening.
Yeah. Or, it's also an incredibly vulnerable thing to say, like, hey, I can't go as fast as you want to go right now. And that, because that is going to make somebody feel weak. And that's not a great way to feel. So you might not want to bring that up all the time. But if you want to have a really good race or have a better time from a kind of a mental or fun aspect, being able to, you know, speaking personally, being able to just have the freedom or being comfortable with Chris to be able to say, hey, I can't push that pace, or hey, I can, or we got to slow down or speed up or whatever the situation is. I guess that, you know, I guess I am highlighting Chris's abilities as a partner to, you know, make me feel comfortable to like reveal or be vulnerable, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it definitely helps for having a more positive race experience, and honestly, a more fun one, because it's not, you don't have this mental, mental fog or cloud or like thing that's kind of looming over you, like the, you know, elephant in the room situation of like, hey, I have a lot of these feelings, how sometimes this stuff is, and then expressing that or being free to be like, show other people your big elephant, I guess.
I
suppose I'm what I'm trying to get at.
That's so important. And I know there's so many people that before swim run, they're planning to do the race with a partner, and then one gets injured or sick or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you just have to find a new partner like 3-4 days before a big race. And so I know you don't have that same kind of time to maybe go through everything, but like something I would prioritize then would actually be to go through like the goals that you have, and also actually, even if it's somebody that you don't know that well, to actually show your emotions and your weaker points going through some of that. I think you'll definitely gain from that when you're in the race situation.
Oh, totally.
If it's a partner that you've been competing with for a couple of years, you get to know that, you know, more and more. But, you know, things, that's the exciting thing with swim run. You could have a new teammate all of a sudden, like 2 days before a race, because something happened. So definitely something to prioritize.
So team Envol athlete, you know, Desiree Anderson, she raced, I think it's Attila Cannes, with a new teammate who only spoke French. So they couldn't communicate at all. And they won, you know, the mixed event, fourth overall, something crazy, right? And I mean, I was just so fascinated how obviously it was all nonverbal communication. But they managed to have a really successful race. And I know they're both super elite athletes. But to me, that's like, I think the only way that's possible is by having self-confidence and then trust in your partner. Is that how you would see it as well?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of things you can communicate non-verbally. The way, you know, posture. I'm sure that when she was running, she was, you know, really pulling the toe line, saying, you know, that's a sign of saying, you know, come on, let's go. So you can communicate in a lot of different ways without talking. And that's their race is definitely proof of that.
Yeah. So I guess the speaking of elephants in the room, you know, this year has been really hard on a lot of people with COVID and races being canceled and a lot of people putting a lot of emotional energy and, you know,
into other things, or
had emotional energy tied into racing the world championship or traveling to do an amazing race or something. And none of that happened. Do you have any tips? Like, since this seems to be continuing for at least, you know, a little bit into 2021, who knows, on how athletes can sort of manage kind of that disappointment and not necessarily, you know, and not like lose the love for the sport or kind of fall off training and all that.
Well, motivation is, I mean, this, as you say, this year has definitely been a year to practice your motivational skills, motivation is a lot about being aware of the rewards and benefits that you expect to experience through like your sports participation. But a year like 2020, when there hasn't been that much sports participation, it's important to practice that you can like persist through difficult times, even when these rewards and benefits are not immediately forthcoming, that you don't have that direct reward. So this year or in any other times when you have difficulties with your motivation, understanding that if you can get out of this period and persist during this time, you will come out as a more mentally stronger person. And I know that's very easy to say, and like, how do you do that? How do you persist during this time? Well, one thing is, and I think I spoke a bit about that during Fanny and Desiree's Scala, is to work on acceptance and accepting or being able to control what you actually can control and accepting what you can't control. So when it comes to races and training, setting up goals that you, even if you can't set up goals specifically for a certain race at this point, because you don't know when you're going to race again, putting up different goals with your sport and seeing that as one step of the line to reach your bigger goal, whatever that is. For instance, what is it that you don't usually practice that much? It could be like mobility or maybe mindfulness or, you know, that inner core that's so boring to do. Nobody does it, right? Everybody knows that we have to do it to become strong runners. And so looking at what you can control and work on that instead is one way of maintaining your motivation to still keep that fire running a bit. and then trying to look at the big picture, like what is your goal with sports? Like, is it, as we were saying before, that a lot of us are doing it because it's fun, it's something that we do, you know, in our own free time, and we don't get paid to do it, we're doing it because it's something that we love to do. So mm-hmm. like every all kind of training that we're doing right now is a tiny one step in that big picture. So I think that's something to work on during this period when a lot of us are struggling with motivation.
I love it. Great. You know, one thing that I've sort of discovered this year, I wouldn't call it like a philosophy or anything, but just kind of decoupling my goals from events and having sort of my goals be more personal. Like, you know, I want to be able to do this thing, and it's, you know, or like, maybe, doesn't matter what it is, but just like the idea that's like, oh, it's not all about having everything be tied to an A race or B race. Do you think, and I'm hoping to try to kind of maintain that even when races come back, because it's kind of like, yeah, I feel like I'm ready, I'm mission ready to do a race or whatever, but it's not like, oh, well, all my emotional sort of fulfillment is tied into this race. And I feel like, if anything, COVID has helped me kind of understand that I shouldn't put anything, like the race should just be kind of like the victory lap or the ultimate expression of training or something, but not have it be like, oh, this is the mountain that I need to climb.
I think that's really important. And research has proven several times that exercise and training is really helpful with anxiety or with like perform, like all other performances that we do, because we don't only perform during a swim run competition, we actually perform every day in different situations, like family life or in our workplace. And training is one way of getting in more energy, handling strong emotions like anxiety, for instance. Like training helps us with all of this and gives us all of these endorphins that will help us throughout the day. So definitely looking at like your training or your practice as something that you is part of your life, a way to cope with everything in your life. At least that helps me when it comes to doing that running session that I'm not actually longing for in this darkness that we have in Sweden right now. But then, you know, remembering that, oh yeah, you know, this is not just because I want to, you know, reach podium out there 2021. That's not only why I'm doing this. I have different reasons to do it.
Yeah.
Well, Susie, I think we could probably talk to you for another hour.
I want to hire you.
Yeah. Are you taking new patients, and do you take Anthem Blue Cross US medical insurance?
They don't have that concept
there.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you coming on and really, I mean, covering a topic that we haven't covered here before, but I mean, I'm just going to say it now. I think that we'll probably have you back on. So just, you know,
cool.
Clear
I'm
your
looking
calendar.
Forward to it.
Clear your calendar.
Yeah. So the business, is called Push On Coaching, and it's pushoncoaching.com if they want to learn more about you.
Just push PUSHON.
Yep.
Coaching.com.
Yes. Yep.
You're also on Instagram, and you were super responsive. So I really appreciate that. And I think that you're probably going to be getting a lot of DMs after this. We just really want to thank you for taking your time. We know you have a new baby in the house. So we doubly thank you for making the time for us. And best of luck in 2021.
You too, and happy new year. And hope to see you next year during a swim run race.
Yeah, totally. We will be in Europe at some point.
Yeah.
That's as pinned down as we can get right now.
Okay, well, you guys take care, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave a review on iTunes if you're so inclined.
You can also sign up for our newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at The Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, drop us an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Writing Easy Records for our show music, and of course our wives for their support and tolerance of our swim run activities, hobbies, and other bullshit we do.
Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
And then a run.
And then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then run to the finish line and just keep going until you're done.
Yes, or
until
run
you
to
cross the finish line.
Or run to the car.
Or run to your car.
Somewhere. Just keep running. Peace.